Hello, and welcome to A Writer's Journey, the podcast that will talk about everything the aspiring author wants to know about going from blank page to published. I'm Sarah Whitford, and I'm here with my co-host, Terrence Zepke. Today, we're on episode number 13. I'm finished writing my novel, or am I? Okay, so we can pretty much assume, we all know that when you finish writing your first draft, you're not going to just publish right then. But the question we as writers all need to ask ourselves is, when are we finished? At what point are we ready to move forward with the publishing end of things? So I'm going to just ask Terrence, how do we know when we're really done?
Well, that's a good question here, because I think that so much time and attention is focused on the opening of your book, grabbing the reader right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to finish your book as strong or stronger than how you started it. And that can be a challenge, especially for new writers. So there's some questions I've come up with here that you can ask yourself to make sure that your ending is really the ending that it should be, that you want it to be. And one of the questions is your closer, that's what we call the ending, the closer a doozy? It needs to blow the readers away. It needs to be shocking, unexpected, and exciting. And here's an important point here. It needs to be more dramatic with a bigger climax than anything you've written up to this point. So there shouldn't be a scene earlier in the book that outshines your finale.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's an important question as you're looking at it here, you know. And number two, does your protagonist face his antagonist, or is there a showdown? Is the crime solved? Does your protagonist save the day? In other words, is your conflict addressed and, you know, properly addressed in your finale? So that's another one here. And then the third question I think you need to be asking is, does the closer show or tell? And this is important because the resolution needs to be self-evident. You shouldn't have to rely on lengthy dialogue or long descriptions or musings to get the job done. As opposed to some experts, I believe in show and tell, as I believe there's a time and a place for both. But in the ending of your book, in the closer, it's all about showing. So that's an important thing that you need to look at there. And number four, are you using backstory or flashbacks in the closer? No.
Okay.
That's a big no-no. You cannot be using flashbacks or backstory at this part of the story. This part of the book needs to be about action and resolution. It's not the time and place to introduce new material. Because, I mean, obviously, Sarah, by this point, you should have set up your story so it's not necessary to be bringing something new in.
That's right.
So you understand I'm saying that really you have to be very careful in the beginning of a book and at the end of the book about using backstory or flashbacks. That's just a device that you have to – that new writers tend to fall back on too much there. But it's a very big turnoff to agents and editors when you open a book with, you know, a flashback. And it's a very big no-no to end your book that way. So, and last but not least, is your conclusion logical? Does it make sense? Is it how it should be? So those are five questions that you need to ask as you read through the last 50 pages of your book.
I would think that to add to that last one thing I would think of is can you make sure that your conclusion of your book won't make the reader want to throw your book against the wall? Give people a satisfying ending, even if things don't end up, you know, nice and pretty, because things don't always end up nice and pretty. At least make it something that your readers aren't going to just hate you once they're done reading the book for taking them on a journey and then just giving them a really awful, awful ending.
Well, Sarah, as usual, you're ahead of me here, because I had some more do's and don'ts.
Oh, okay.
For your closer, and the first one of it was tie up all your loose ends.
Okay.
Answer all the questions. And really the only exception should be for this is if your book is going to be part of a series. And in that case, you can leave a door or a window open because you're carrying your story on. But that would be the only time. Otherwise, like you said, when somebody – and I've had this happen. I know you have too, like a favorite TV show – or a book, a movie, any number of things that you see, when they end it a certain way, do you remember that TV show Lost that everybody, all the fans were nuts over? And
oh,
then
yeah.
when it ended, they said it was the worst finale ever. They had promised to tie up all the loose ends, and the people had held on to listen to it and all that, and they didn't. They ended up with more questions than they answered. And so people were very disappointed, you know, and just felt like they'd wasted their time.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that's not what you want. You don't want your book to be thrown up against the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Frustration. Another one of do's and don'ts here, don't introduce new subplots or characters. Anything in the last 50 pages of your book should have been foreshadowed. So you understand what I'm saying?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. And this is a big one here. The third thing here is don't let it drag on and on. Get to it. Build it up and then let your reader off the hook before they lose interest.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen that in
these
to books that just, you're like, are you ever going to just
wrap
be
it
done?
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an important thing there. And last but not least to me would be to engage your reader. By this, I mean that don't think that by the end you've done all the heavy lifting and now you can just kind of coast through the ending there, because this is, you need to keep the reader emotionally invested up until the very last sentence. The reader still needs to have a whoa, I didn't see that coming, a wow kind of moment. And I love twist endings, you know, when I read books. I hate predictable endings. Have you ever had a book where you just knew how it was going to end, and sure enough, it did, and you're thinking, why couldn't they have done something?
Just a little different. Yeah.
So you want to surprise and delight your readers. And that's what, if you think about back to your favorite books, a book that you've read that you just absolutely couldn't put down, a book that you felt like you lost something when you finished it. Have you ever had one of those where you read and you just feel like?
Not recently, thankfully. Not recently. Recently, I've most of the books that I've read, I didn't feel like I wasted time or anything reading them. But it's definitely, whether it's a TV show or whether it's a book or what. But you know, one thing that comes to mind for me, there was a series that the BBC aired a few years ago called Merlin. You might not have seen that show, but my son and I watched the whole series on Netflix. Just, it was wonderful. You know, we went from episode to episode, and there were some huge turning points in the series where you knew certain things were inevitable, that they had to come, but you just couldn't wait for them to come, and then they finally did. But then the last episode ended in such an awful, awful way. You feel like, I have just spent, a hundred some odd hours watching this show, and they're going to end it like this. It's kind of like the Lost thing that you mentioned. So.
Yeah, so what I was saying is, if you have a book, like one of your really favorite books, that you just absolutely love the ending, look at it and give it some thought, you know, and see, did your ending have that kind of, will your readers feel like that? How can you make your ending have that kind of impact on the readers? So, okay, now here's what I say here. You've addressed all of this. Say you've gone through this and you fixed some things and you feel good about your ending to your book and you just feel like it's at a place now where it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, yay, you get to take a moment, you get to celebrate that milestone, and then you get ready for reality.
Okay.
Because you know it's not really ready.
That's right. That's right.
And I was thinking, Sarah, that this would be a good place for you to lead the next part of our discussion today, which is about the final revision process and beta readers.
Right. And,
so,
I'm learning as I go, Terrence. I mean, you have given me a lot of advice, sort of mentored me in writing this first novel of mine. One thing I could say is I knew, obviously, that when I finished my first draft that I wasn't going to be done. I knew even when I finished my second draft I wasn't going to be done. Why? Because I knew when I was writing my first draft, and I've talked about this on this program a lot, that I wrote as if. Once I decided there were changes that needed to be made in the story, rather than going back and changing them right then, I just made notes about it. So that way, when I went through and wrote the second draft, I was applying those changes that I had already planned to make in the first draft. And so by the end of the second draft, that was really just a more final version of my first draft. And then, you know, you're supposed to take some time away this is important, this is so important, and I'm even seeing it more now. I thought it was important when you're done with your first, you know, draft, with your rough draft, to take a break before you start revising. But now I'm learning there is some benefit to taking breaks between drafts. Don't you think that that might be a good idea, Terrence?
Oh, absolutely. And it's really hard to see that. I'm going to put you on the spot, Sarah, because we have this discussion before where I told you when you finished your first draft to just put it down, just walk away for now, and you were on fire. And I'm like, but Sarah, you really need to give it some time to just kind of sit and you just you didn't really get it at the time, but later, now you see where you have to have a little distance because you're just too close to the book. But then you have to be careful that you don't wait too long, that you can't go back, that you feel like overwhelmed with all the stuff you've started thinking and you can't get back to it. And you and I have talked about that on an episode recently here about hitting the wall.
We did.
And that, so that's something, if anybody wants to talk about it, it might be that your revisions seem overwhelming or you don't know where to start or you're not sure what to do. We're not going to discuss all that today because we've already done that. But that's very helpful. But because at some point you do have to jump back in. And that can be a hard thing to do.
And I did, and then, you know, after I did finish my first and then even what I would call my second draft, which was really just going back and adding in the things that I already had planned to add in or change from the first draft to the second draft, I did force myself to take a break because I had heard it from you and I had read it, you know, I had read it elsewhere, and I knew that I had to make myself do it. It was very hard. I could not take a month like I had heard some people recommend. I can't remember if you recommended that long, Terrence, I think I ended up taking a couple of weeks, and during that time I actually started plotting my next book. So I didn't actually start writing it, but I started outlining my next book because that kept me busy. I still had those creative juices flowing and didn't want to just not do any writing.
Right.
And so, but then when I went back and started revisions to produce my third draft, you know, I felt pretty good about it. I found I had to print the thing out. I could not edit on the screen. That was just not working for me. So I had to print the thing out and mark up my manuscript before I made all the changes. And once I was done with my third draft, I felt pretty good about it. And I thought, you know what, I think that I, you know, tightened it up a little bit more. I guess you could say I almost had a fourth draft, and then I decided to send it to my beta readers. But Terrence, I second guess myself now because I don't know whether I sent it to my beta readers too soon. Because after I sent it to my beta readers, I started reading again and I saw more things that I wished that I had done a little differently. Just little refinements, little nuanced things as far as, you know, dialogue, beats of dialogue, you know, the beats between dialogue and things like that to make conversations more smooth and whatnot. And so, yeah.
Well, I think at this point, my recommendation, because I'm sure other writers have gone through this too, you're way too close to it. And instead of starting to go back in there and do whether the fourth or fifth draft or whatever you're talking about, is just wait for some feedback from your beta readers. Because, you know, you – right now have no objectivity left.
I think that's true.
Yeah, and so you're starting to second guess everything, which is very common, as we talked about in an earlier episode, that this is part of the – and I think any profession where you're in a creative mode, there's always going to be some, you know, some doubt and some question. But so I think we should talk a bit about beta readers because a lot of people don't know – about this area. I tell you, I didn't know much about beta readers until we started talking about this because I've always been traditionally published and we never used beta readers. At the publishing house, it went right to a copy editor. And then it went on to an editor, an assistant editor. And it would come back to me and they'd have questions and comments and thoughts and then it would go out and then I would address those and it would go back again and then eventually it would work its way up the food chain to the executive editor. And by that point, you know, there would just be some things that she would say that I needed to make more clear, I needed to change, I needed to address, and then it would go to press. So I never really had much experience because the publisher people were my beta readers, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really know. I imagine it would be very hard to find people that you could really trust with your sacred manuscript, and people that you feel could give you constructive criticism.
Well, I have a lot to say about this because I put a lot of thought into choosing beta readers for my manuscript. And first, let me say, regardless, you've been very fortunate, Terrence, because you were with a traditional publishing for quite a while. But those writers who are just starting, whether they're trying to break in to traditional publishing and they need to find an agent, or whether they are going to go the indie route and self-publish. No matter what, it's a good idea to have beta readers, which is basically just another way of saying test readers, people who are going to read your manuscript and give you feedback on whether or not they think the story is strong, the characters are strong, the dialogue seems natural and realistic, those sorts of things. It's good to have other readers read it before you pass it along. If you're passing it to an agent, you still want your manuscript to be as good as you can possibly get it before
right.
you start, trying to market it to agents. And if you're going to independently publish, my goodness, you have to do this because guess what? If you are going to independently publish, and we're going to be talking about this in an episode coming up very soon about traditional versus indie publishing. But if you are going to publish independently, guess what? The responsibility is 100% on you to make sure your novel is as good as it can possibly be before you put it out there. There is a lot of lesser than work. I'll just put it like that. There are a lot of independent writers who are putting out just even things that they've not bothered to proofread. I saw an advertisement for an independently published book on Twitter the other day that used the wrong form of the word to in their advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying something too much, but they wrote T-O, and I'm just thinking, oh, my goodness, this is a huge advertisement for your book. You cannot do this, So
and Sarah is a magazine editor, so I'm sure that really ran her nuts.
You have no idea. So in any case, but for me, for The Smuggler's Gambit, I had to really put some thought into who I was going to get to do my beta reading. And Terrence is one of my beta readers, I'm very proud to say. My sister is another of my beta readers. She is an English major. She is a book nerd. She has such an eye for detail. It's amazing, and I don't doubt that she will, have some really good notes for me when she's done. Then I have a couple of other, actually two or three other beta readers who are going to be looking at it. A couple of them are reading it more just as readers. Because they're not necessarily really literary people, but they love to read. And then I do have one other person who is reading it who is pretty strong with English, and it's an old friend of mine from my school days. And so here's the thing: I'm really hoping to get good feedback. That you have to have a thick skin, when it comes to your writing if you actually want to produce good work. You can't go in and get beta readers and then ask them to give you feedback and then not be ready if they do have something, critical to say. You want critical feedback. That doesn't mean you have to take all of the advice someone gives you or listen to all of their criticisms. Some of their criticisms might really not be relevant to what you're trying to achieve with your novel, but it's good to listen and hear what those things are anyway so that you can sort of weigh it out and decide what really is applicable to the changes that you need to make going forward to make your novel as good as it can possibly be. If there are places in the novel that are pacing issues, parts are going too slow. Somebody is reading through certain sections and they're just thinking, oh my goodness, when is it, get to some sort of action or something. That you need to know that because you might need to go in there and maybe add a scene or, jazz up the scene, make it more interesting. If they're reading dialogue and the dialogue doesn't really sound like people actually talk, one way that you can test that, read all of your dialogue in your book out loud. If you read it out loud, you will soon find, I guarantee you, that some of your dialogue sounds more like something that's been written than something that someone would actually say. People don't always use all of their words that they would use in writing when they're speaking. So these are the kinds of things. But make sure you have beta readers who can be honest with you. It might be good to have one or two that you know are just going to tell you it's wonderful, but really, I'd rather not waste my time with it. I want beta readers. If they're going to be reading the book, I want people who can give me honest feedback.
Well, let me ask you, Sarah. That's a good point here, because I don't have a lot to add to that. Just a couple of things. One, it's concerning here because writers are egotistical.
Mm-hmm.
We really do want to hear, that is a breakout novel. That's the best book I've ever read. It's very hard to hear criticism. But believe me, agents and editors will give it to you straight.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the time to start, like you said, thickening your skin,
mm-hmm.
because there's no room for ego. They'll crush it. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you what works and what doesn't, you know. And so you do want to get some feedback. That said, I would think it would be hard with beta readers because you need to get people that read the genre that you're writing in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told you, you're writing historical fiction. I don't read a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have a good gauge as to what – I mean, I know good writing, but I don't know necessarily good historical fiction
mm-hmm.
writing. But that said, you know, I still think I can do a decent job of critiquing
mm-hmm.
Your work. But you can imagine it's a delicate balance for people, because here you and I are friends and you're an aspiring writer up and coming. I don't want to knock you back. You know what I'm saying? So, and there are some people that might not take the criticism well. And what do you do then if it ends, you know, it could end a friendship, or it could end, you know, I mean, I think you've had experience where you've been a beta reader and it hasn't been well received.
Well, I've had a few conversations with folks about this recently, because I've made a lot of writing friends online, and we communicate about our various manuscripts and projects that we're working on and whatnot, and there's definitely a sense of people want beta readers, but I don't get the impression that everyone wants honest feedback. And,
right.
And I have had one experience in reading something. I never was asked to beta read it, but I did just out of friendship read a novel that was recently published by a friend, and I thought the writing was lovely. It's not my cup of tea, that particular genre, but you know, I let the writer know what I thought about that I thought the writing was lovely. I didn't get all the way through the book, but they stopped talking to me. So they got really offended. But you know what? Novels can be really personal, and they can be something that people feel very, very, very attached to. And
mm-hmm.
and you know, another writer friend, I've recently offered to beta read her book when someone else who's beta reading it now is done with it. It's a genre that I do think that I would like. And bless her heart, the first beta reader just came right out and said that they hated it, that it was boring, that nothing happened. And, you know, I know that's got to be hard, but at the same time, if that's true, first of all, I'm glad that that beta reader wasn't me. And because I would have hated to have to just say that, you know, I don't think I would have said it quite that way, but hopefully she'll get some more input from the second beta reader who has it right now that might help her sort of figure out what's going wrong, you know, if things truly are, or it might just be that that first reader just, it might not have been their genre. It might not have been what they were interested in. So, they didn't understand that you have to lay groundwork, in the story. And you do, Terrence, you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, when you're writing a novel, there naturally has to be a section in the early part of the book where you're sort of introducing the characters, you're laying the groundwork, and it can, this is something that I expressed to you, that, you know, I felt a little bit nervous about the pacing about the first quarter of my novel, first third of my novel, because I said, as I've gone back through and reread it on, you know, revisions, I'm thinking, gosh, some of these sections just, you know, I feel like they're a little bit slow. But, I said I wasn't sure whether or not that's just because I know what's coming and I'm ready to get to the action myself, or if it's because they really do need work. And so that's the kind of thing I'm hoping to get from my beta readers.
Well, I would think that that's why the genre would be so important, because if you have somebody that reads Tom Clancy and Nelson DeMille books, and they open with explosives, you know, scenes and all that. Then you ask them to read your story, then they may hate it because that's not the kind of thing they're used to. They don't, you know, they're not used to a story being set up like that and all that, because they just jump right in with the kind of thing they're reading. So I would think it'd be very important to have a good selection of beta readers. And this is where you have to be careful when you're giving it to family and friends, I would think, because you just, I mean, your family's either going to go over to one end and just be highly critical, or they're just going to be gushing. So I would think it would be hard, but in your case, you say you have a sister that's really, really good with this, so that's,
I don't think she's done beta reading before per se, but she has read so, I mean, she just reads and reads. I mean, constantly. She's one of those people who always, always, always has a book. It doesn't matter where you are, where you see her. She always has a book, and she reads a wide variety of genres. You know, she's not just fixed on one genre. She reads very high level literature, and then she'll read, you know, popular things that are on the shelf at Barnes & Noble. So she's got diverse knowledge and tastes about it. And so hopefully that'll let her look at my manuscript and decide whether or not it's a story that seems worthwhile. Maybe she'll have some input if there are any sections that do seem to drag, as far as, you know, hey, this sort of lost me a little bit, or, you know, I really liked this part, or I wish you had more of this, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think let's if you don't have anything else to add on this, let's just do a little summary.
Okay.
Of this here. In this episode, we talked about why it's so important to finish as strong as you start your book. And so many books start with a powerful opening and then segue into a moderate middle and then peter out with a weak closer. So you want to start the last 50 pages of your manuscript and give it a critical review, asking yourself these questions, these five questions I mentioned, and the four common pitfalls. And it could be all you need to do to fix it might be to cut some dialogue or insert an action scene. Or it may require a lot more. But you can't be a lazy writer. Or rather, you can't afford to be a lazy writer at
this
stage. And, Sarah, you remember we talked about this during an earlier episode of A Writer's Journey, where you mentioned that you hated to admit that you recognized at one point that you thought you might be a lazy writer.
Well, I mentioned that there have been times where I have sort of caught myself feeling, you know, apprehensive about making certain scene changes because I knew how much work it was going to involve. But you have to overcome that feeling that sort of makes you feel, you know, lazy about your writing. You can't be a lazy writer. I don't think you can be, and I wouldn't dare want to be a lazy writer myself. But you have to fight that within yourself if you're someone who is that way, you know, if you ever think that. But you definitely have to fight that and do what's going to make your story as good as it can possibly be.
Yeah, because you can go in. It's amazing to me to see new writers like you now, and you're trying to help mentor them without chopping their legs off under them because you've been through all of this and all. And, you know, I've written books in 2 weeks before and then spent 2 years on revisions. And so you have to be careful when you deal with, you know, people, because you don't want to discourage them, but it's a process, and there's no quick, easy way out. You just have to do the work and plod on here. And so I created, in honor of this episode here, I've created a manuscript checklist.
Okay.
And I thought we'd post it on our website so that when you're in the process of tightening your manuscript, it'll give you some guidelines to work with there, and so.
Okay, and if anybody is curious, the other day I actually posted an article on my blog about my experience, my current experience with revisions, and just that I had just sent out my manuscripts to beta readers, but that I had sort of calculated, I think it will be the seventh draft, hopefully, when I'll finally be able to publish this thing. I've thought about how, you know, having to produce another draft when I'm done with my beta readers, and then I've got another highly critical reader who then I'll have read it, and then I might even do more revisions then. And then at that point,
Would that be Dad?
No, no.
No, okay.
This is another bookworm friend.
Okay.
But someone that I know would have pull no punches.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to give it to this person yet. I would be terrified to give it to this person yet. And then finally, I do intend, Lord willing, to hire a professional editor to go over it once more, and then make one more round of changes based on what the editor says, and then hopefully it'll be ready for publishing.
And people should know there's different kinds of editing services,
mm-hmm.
because if you just get copy editing, they're not going to tell you structural issues. So you need to be clear what you're hiring your editor to do.
Really, once I get to the point of hiring a professional editor, at that point I want to be confident enough with my story, my plot, my pacing, my characters, my dialogue, all of that. The only thing that I really want that editor to be doing is to be looking at it stylistically, sort of as a, you know, almost as a final copy edit.
Okay.
So,
but some other people might want to get more of an input,
mm-hmm.
and you can get that service as well,
mm-hmm.
From editors. So that's just important thing to do here. Well, because, you know, this is, I don't know why this popped in my head as you were saying that, Sarah, but it just popped in my head here. You never get a second chance to make a first impression.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So I think with your book there, you're so excited you're done and you really just want to get it out there, but you only get one first debut.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so my quote of the day today, Sarah,
mm-hmm.
Dorothy Parker says, "I hate writing. I love having written."
You know what? It is so funny. I've been trying to remember who said that. I wanted to tweet that the other day, but I could not remember who said the quote because I've read that before. And, in fact, I think I actually read another writer quoting that quote before because it's so applicable to all of us. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it, you know, I enjoy writing, but sometimes I do hate it because it can be so frustrating. But, boy, having done it, having accomplished that feels like nothing else. So it's wonderful. Anyway, well, audience, thank you for joining us. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. And just as a reminder, you can subscribe on iTunes, A Writer's Journey. You can also find this podcast posted on my website, which is sarahwhitford.com, sarahwhitford.com, or Terrence's website, TerrenceZepke.com, TerrenceZepke.com. We'll have that questionnaire that Terrence mentioned linked from the post for this podcast, and we'll just look forward to you joining us again. Thanks.